This is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are charging the CIA with acting above the law. Senate Democrat Dick Durbin wrote a letter to Attorney General Michael Mukasey asking for a probe into whether the CIA obstructed justice by destroying videotapes from 2002, which contained interrogation scenes that many critics have described as torture. President Bush says he doesn't recall being told about the existence of the videotapes or that they were destroyed. CIA Director Michael Hayden admits to ordering the tapes' destruction to protect the identity of CIA operatives. Four of the five British residents held by the U.S. at Guantanamo Bay will be released, according to a report from the BBC. The British government requested release of all five men who have residential status in Britain but are not citizens. The Pentagon is warning Britain that the men are dangerous. The U.S. accuses one Jordanian refugee of being a prominent al-Qaeda recruiter and financier. State Department Inspector General Howard Krongard has resigned his position under heavy scrutiny regarding his brother's link to Blackwater USA. As the State Department's top investigator, Krongard has been accused of stopping probes into waste, fraud, and abuse in Iraq. Meantime, federal prosecutors have narrowed the focus of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians. Authorities are now looking specifically at just three Blackwater guards. Others have been given immunity for cooperating in the case. A U.S. Marine faces a murder charge in connection with the shooting death of an Iraqi detained during combat operations in Fallujah. Sergeant Jermaine Nelson faces possible court-martial. In Brussels, meeting last night, NATO agreeing to maintain its 17,000-troop peacekeeping force in Kosovo, the former Yugoslavian province, threatening to declare independence Tuesday. That's a move Serbia says will lead to war. A fierce cyclone is pummeling Fiji with 160-mile-an-hour winds, the Category 4 storm expected to raise floodwaters by as much as 6 feet. And it is the worst offshore oil spill in South Korea's history. An oil tanker collided with another vessel this morning. At least 2.7 million gallons of crude oil have spilled into the sea, creating a slick very wide. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Super slugger Barry Bonds today pleaded not guilty to four counts of perjury. He was indicted last month by a federal grand jury for lying to investigators concerning his alleged use of performance-enhancing drugs. Less than 50 remaining Pearl Harbor survivors stood in honor of their fallen comrades today, the 66th anniversary of the Japanese bombing. Survivors were given a thunderous standing ovation as they saluted the sunken hull of the USS Arizona. More than 2,300 Americans died in the attacks on the morning of December 7, 1941. America's consumer confidence is sinking. It is currently at its second lowest level since 1992. Consumer spending accounts for two-thirds of U.S. economic growth, so what buyers do is critical. Retail sales have comparatively remained steady, with a slight increase expected for the month of November. Chrysler executives say the company will lose $1 billion this year. The newly private company temporarily shut down shifts at some of its U.S. plants and in Mexico. Light sweet crude oil trading at $88.28 a barrel, gold at $800.20 an ounce. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 5.5 points at 13,625, NASDAQ and S&P 500 both down nearly 3 points. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
We'll be right back. Get around the radio, kids. It's time for Strictly Confidential. It's the homosexual agenda on steroids, putting the Dominionists and the loyal Bushies and the rest of America's underbelly on notice that the GLBT community is simply not going to take it anymore. So, just like gay kryptonite, here's Peter Godbold.
Good evening, America, and good morning, world. Welcome to Book, Chapter, and Verse 85 of Strictly Confidential. I am Peter Godbold, and welcome to the LGBTQQS, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, questioning, and straight version of Conversation Radio, exclusively on the listener-supported Head On Radio Network. Thank you for making Strictly Confidential a part of your day. Today is, in fact, Friday, December the 7th, which means there are only 17 days left in the war on Christmas. Remember, you must kill a tree before it kills you. Each year, we're, of course, accused of staging a war on Christmas, so it's about time we settle this conflict. Just shoot all the trees. That'll stop the whole controversy. Santa, too, and those freaky little elves, except for Rudolph. You know, Rudolph, I've read something recently. There's a whole story about Rudolph was gay. It's a whole analogous thing to about Rudolph. He was the outcast, and you know, like about sports, you know, they never let poor Rudolph join in the reindeer games. I'll have to dig that. I'll have to try to figure out where I read that, because that would be something I could do when it's closer to Christmas. Let's see, who am I? I am Peter Godbold, and I already said that. Welcome to the Head On Radio Network. Friday, December 2nd, it's a live show. If you're listening about 9 o'clock in the evening on a Friday, December the 7th, it's live, and you're welcome to phone in and talk with us. It's a Just Us show tonight. The show site is strictlyconfidentialradio.com, and there you're going to find links to all of the guests as well as to audio archives from the past shows, and you'll find links to our chat room, which is active as we speak, and you'll find links to the Head On Radio Network main site. And there you can find out about all the other progressive programming on the Head On Radio Network, and I am only a very small part of that. I'm very pleased to be a part of the Head On Radio Network. There are links there for Strictly Confidential's MySpace page, and links there to help you locate the music that you hear on the show. Toll-free line is 877, the number 4, Head On. That's 877, the number 4, Head On, and that translates to 877-443-2366. Or if you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio a few bucks, and that's area code 304-658-3333. Rings in West Virginia, and either Bob or Agnes will take the call and put you online, and I'll take your call. The email, there was a time I could speak. It really was. I remember that. Anyway, the email arrives normally to peter@headonradionetwork.com. And I do try to check the mail during the breaks. You know, Strictly Confidential, again, is listener-supported, and we have thousands of listeners out there. We're in the middle of our December fundraising effort at this point in time. It pays for the computers and the packets that pass and the T1 lines and all of the things that we have to do to keep the network streaming. This is not funds that go into our pockets. We are all unsalaried folks. We do this because we believe in it. We feel that that makes a huge difference in what we say on the air, because we're not panning to any particular group of people. We are, in fact, authentic liberals. We just don't get any more liberal than this. Oh, Lord, let's pick up from last night. There were several directions I could go, and I think what I'll do is pick up just quickly from last night. We mentioned Denny Meyer last evening. We're doing this segment on the unbelievably large increase in suicides from veterans who are returning from Iraq. I believe that the report was 127 per day, if I'm not incorrect. And the large percentage of those was in the age group of 20 to 24. And it came up that the American Veterans for Equal Rights website has the phone number there if you need to talk to someone at the suicide hotline. That is www.aver.us, and that's the American Veterans for Equal Rights, which is Denny's helps run that. Denny's a wonderful resource. Denny also runs the Gay Military Times site, which is thegaymilitarytimes.com. Stop by. You'll be glad you did. You'll find lots of interesting information there. Also, last evening I left it regarding the failure to pass the Matthew Shepard Act, which is, of course, scandalous, that there was a statement from Matthew Shepard's mother and father, and I didn't have that statement in front of me. I promised I would read it to you this evening, and I will. It's just a few pages into the story. We've got lots of things to talk about tonight. We have some wonderful music tracks. One is a request, and a couple of dance tracks for later, and a special song. There was someone who typed in chat, and we were talking about Bernie Ward earlier, that she wanted her country back, and I don't blame her. There's a song that goes with that. I thought we'd run it later on in the evening. The whole thing about Bernie Ward, if I'm not going to go through that again on this show. There was excellent coverage out on the show that's just prior to this. If you happen to mention to have missed that show, that would be Head On with Bob Kincaid, which runs from 6 until 9 p.m. Eastern Time, and the archives are available at White Rose Society. And by the way, White Rose Society hosts the archives for Strictly Confidential also. It's just that the audio, the links I tell you to go to strictlyconfidentialradio.com, they are actually linked up to the White Rose Society. It's just that you can look up the guests and everything easier on the strictlyconfidentialradio.com site. But, of course, Ben Birch keeps our streams running and keeps the archives archiving, and we very much appreciate that. Normally, we start with a longer story, but there's one. This is just a fairly short set of facts I want to get out to you. I was just stunned by this when I first came across it. Some research has been done by Right Wing Watch regarding Mike Huckabee, who is, of course, the current darling of the roach-infested and covered with lice right. Right Wing Watch has resurrected some of Huckabee's previous statements about us gays and lesbians and the whole alphabet. They're pretty terrifying. As you know, he was lieutenant governor. When he was lieutenant governor in Arkansas, he was also pastor of the First Baptist Church in Texarkana, and then later, I believe, went on to be the Democrat. Not a brother that later went on to be the actual governor of Arkansas. But in any case, Right Wing Watch has discovered some of the statements that he made back then, and you realize he's pulling his punches now that he's running for president. He can't be quite that vocal. Times are changing just a bit. But I wanted you to know for sure what we are up against should this man win the election, which is a horrifying thought. You have to also realize that he is an ex-Baptist minister, which will bring up the warm cockles of all the right wing's hearts, so he will be very much loved over a Mormon or any of the others. So, example. Regarding AIDS and regarding Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I agree with the leadership of our military who believe it is not in the best interest of the armed forces to have homosexuals serving on active duty. I believe that to try to legitimize that which is inherently illegitimate would be a disgraceful act of government. I feel that homosexuality is aberrant, unnatural, and a sinful lifestyle, and we now know it can pose a dangerous public health risk. Yeah, that's me, Peggy Plague. This is the rest of his statement. It is the first time in the history of civilization in which the carriers of a genuine plague have not been isolated from the general population. This is a deadly disease for which there is no cure, and it is being treated as a civil rights issue instead of a true health crisis that it really is. If the federal government is truly serious about doing something with the AIDS virus, we need to take steps that would isolate the carriers of this plague. And if you don't think that they have the power to whisk you away and lock you in Gitmo 2, or some abandoned building in the middle of nowhere, you think, again, people are being disappeared all the time. And that's where we're headed. The stage is being set. So it's not just the brown people are facing the risk at this point in time, and I wouldn't put it past him for a heartbeat to do something like that. I just thought you needed to know that for sure. You know, and then you've got the log cabin Republicans asking at the CNN Republican debates, if you could call it that, if he would accept their support. You know, these people, all 22,000 of them, you really need to change your meds. You just really, really do. Huckster is a liar and he's a crook. He will betray any confidence, as you know that they all do. Example, when he was in Arkansas, it was from him. He's the guy who sponsored this and got this law through. Not only could GLBT folks not adopt, if a heterosexual couple adopted and had a homosexual living in their home, that was illegal. So if you had a gay or lesbian son or daughter and you adopted a child, that would have done something illegal in Arkansas. And just by having one of us in the home, he also opposed the lifting of the sodomy statutes. Boy, it's a fine piece of work these people are. And, you know, they've got us chasing us. What they're doing to Bernie, it's astounding to me. You know, I've listened to Bernie quite a lot. That, you know, he ran pretty late here, but there's been many a night, well, before I started this show, because my schedule has changed a lot, but that I would turn on Bernie's stream and go to sleep in the evening, later in the evening after Mike Malloy, actually, to listen to Bernie. I was always very impressed. He was very genuine, and this whole thing's reeks of the, for instance, the Republicans for the Department of Justice investigating just Democrats and, you know, prosecuting cases that are advantageous. You know, Bernie's on commercial radio. He's on a high power. KGO is not a low watt station. That is a huge bright light bulb over in California. It can be received quite a long way. And with skips, it could be received halfway across the country. And they wanted that voice silenced. And, you know, and the very fact that they were monitoring him in a chat room to just get this thing going tells me that even our chat room is monitored. You know it's true. They don't have to physically be there, you realize. It doesn't have to be a goon in your chat room. Well, you know, all they have to do is contact Sigma Chat and say, "Hi, we're Homeland Security. We need to know all the IPs that were logged in." I'm not trying to scare you away from chat. It's a wonderful place. Hell, even if you don't go to the chat room, you're probably being monitored. Your email is, and your phone calls are. We all know that. We don't find that out too much in the mainstream media, but we're all indeed being monitored. And to make it even worse, I saw Pam's house blend today. Over the last few days, she's reporting that there is a site that keeps track of openly gay elected public officials, and what they're doing is the right wing skinheads are distributing lists now on the internet of all of the elected LGBT people in public office, and telling them to hang on to the lists so that they could take, quote, direct action. I don't think it takes too much to figure out what direct action means. You know, first the politicians, and then the radio hosts, and then the listeners, you know. You know. Oh, Lord. You know, if it was the other way around, if LGBT folks were publishing the names of people who opposed abortion or opposed gay rights and said that we should hang on to those lists so we could take direct action, do you think it would be 1 second before the doors were kicked in? Good Lord. Well, I'm going to talk about another country in just a moment. Before we do, let's take Preston from Denver. Preston, welcome to the show.
Hi, Peter.
Good evening to you, sir. It's so nice to hear your voice.
Good to catch up with you. I haven't spoken with you for a while, and glad you were on.
Well, I'm glad to be here. It's always a thrill, and we've had so many wonderful guests lately that with these shows, we really haven't been doing very many calls. We have a run now of just us shows, so things are getting more conversational at this point. We have a guest we normally spend a lot of time with them, and so it's good to be here. It's a great place to be.
Okay. Did you happen to hear, you mentioned the Bernie Ward issue, and I haven't read anything about that case, and it sounds like a real loss to the radio community, though, and have you heard that Stacey Taylor might have a show on KGO? Did I hear that right, or are you familiar with Stacey Taylor?
That I'm not sure about. There was a mention in the article, which I don't, well, I may have it here, of the person that was taking, that was filling in for him. Now, are you talking about the fill-in for Bernie?
Stacey Taylor, actually, he had an Air America show on the local affiliate in San Diego. It was called KLSD. Then about 3-4 weeks ago, that station, I think it flipped to all sports, maybe ESPN radio or something else. And there was a lot of, you know, organizing and protests of that. I think a couple thousand people marched, and a lot of people wrote letters and signed petitions. And I heard, or read on a blog or something, that Stacey Taylor might get a position on that major station, KGO, which would, you know, sorry for the loss of Bernie Ward, and I hope that situation is resolved fairly. But maybe Stacey Taylor's getting a shot. I don't know.
Well, I certainly hope so.
That's all. Because,
Bernie did a show on Sunday mornings also over there at KGO, it was called God Talk. And often I was away on Sunday mornings and didn't get to hear that show, but he exposed many of the hypocrisies and things that were going on in his own church, which was, of course, the Catholic Church, which made him very controversial amongst the Catholic Church. But he was very honest and dug deep.
Which brings to mind what that issue is about. I mean, how can you look into the Catholic Church and some of its crimes recently without, you know, stumbling upon pedophilia material on the Internet?
Well, there you go. Good point.
But, I also hope that this conversation around this issue goes beyond the scandal narrative. You know, same with Peter Townsend. It was just, oh my gosh, you know, what was he doing with this stuff? And, who knows? We'll never know, but it's an important issue. You know, the sexual abuse of children, it's a huge, it's a growing threat to the welfare of the youth worldwide.
I completely agree. And in fact, Bernie was very open about the fact he was investigating. In fact, he, according to the article I read, he was talking in chat rooms, not the pedophilia chat rooms, but in other chat rooms, saying that he was doing that. And so he made it public knowledge that the big mistake. They found no pornography. He doesn't fit the profile at all. They found no pornography on the computer or printed out or saved to external drives. It just simply didn't exist. So that being the case, it just seems awfully damn confusing to me. The letter of the law versus the intent, obviously, when they could actually be going after a real pedophile.
Yeah, and some of them are in broad daylight. I was so saddened when I traveled to Peru, and I was flying within Peru, and they had this public service announcement come down on the little TV viewers, and it said something to the effect, please don't treat our children like objects, sexual objects. Buying children will be penalized. It's against the law. And, it was just, there are people taking advantage of their economic desperation and community breakdown. And
that's very disturbing.
Yeah. Yep. And
so this discouraging people to
engage
do you think
sexual
there were
tourism and exploitation of minors? Especially.
So it wasn't just about paying to adopt the child. It wasn't about that at all. It was about sexual exploitation.
Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, kids and their kids are picking up diseases, or they're being impregnated and then left behind in these already impoverished situations. And then some of them dare to immigrate here and get some stuff for their families or whatever. How dare they? And we try to slam the door in their face. It's so depraved.
I agree. The whole concept just baffles me. I cannot understand it, and nor can anyone condone it. You know, the heart of a child is a very delicate thing, and to do something like that is unconscionable. And you know, seriously, there's something seriously disturbed about people that do that. And you know, there's no one who would disagree with that. Yet they would say that the liberal right wants everybody to have, you know, be able to do whatever they want to do, and that the left is the only one that cares about children. It's so deranged, Preston. It's hard to wrap your head around it.
You know, who are these people who are making video games where one of the goals of the game is to, like, I forgot if it was to beat up the prostitute or if it was to kill the prostitute. But I think that was, like, a very popular game. I forget the name of it. But yeah, that's one of the objects of the game. You get extra points or whatever if you abuse, you know, your sex worker.
I'll be damned. That's a new one on me. I had read the one of it in the Left Behind series that you're supposed to go and, you know, either convert them to Jesus or you get to kill them.
Right.
And that one I heard about, but this is advocating violence against women.
Yep. And so it's that's anyway. There certainly is a lot of counter information though being spread, I must say. You know, at the same time, there's this mess going on. There's some great work going on. And in fact, I don't know if you heard me discuss this with Bob. I think I spoke with him about this. But Jenna Bush, George Bush's daughter, has actually written a book that addresses some of these issues and cultivates respect for women and educates people about AIDS and safe sex. She talks about
that. Interesting. No, I did not hear you mention that to Bob. It was a while back, recently though, but not very long ago. I did come across a story that she had written a book, and I just sort of laughed out loud and thought to myself, well, this probably has all the depth of a PowerPoint presentation. I didn't realize it addressed those issues. That's interesting.
Yeah, and yeah, that was kind of my first response. And it's like, oh boy, what's this going to be, selling us or what? But I was like, I should look again, you know, just to be fair. And actually, somebody I work with cut out an interview in the Rocky Mountain News with her, and which I found interesting. It certainly intrigued me. And then she came a few days later and spoke here in Denver and signed her book and gave a good presentation. In fact, you know, she talked about how she interned with UNICEF for a year and a half in Latin America. And she said it changed her life. And she even had a table outside of her book signing where there were UNICEF volunteers handing out their literature and talking about other important issues like water, clean water issues. And so I thought she's doing good work.
That's very encouraging. You know, children either tend to follow exactly their parents' footsteps, so they really get it,
yeah.
And run fleeing from the room maybe be salvageable. Is she the one that's just about to get married or is just married?
I believe she's engaged, yeah. Yeah. And you know, you're right. It's interesting, the relations between parents and kids. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't, the fruit doesn't fall far from the tree or something like that.
Yes,
yeah,
right? sometimes fruit runs from the roof.
Yeah, yeah. And sometimes it's this weird mix, you know. There can be those separations and, you know, common points at the same time. But Taoism actually has this interesting proverb about how they can be opposed. They say something like, the father who eats a lot of salt has a child who drinks a lot of water.
That's wonderful. I had not heard that before, but I totally love it. That could also be used as a kind of a country sort of, you know, a rural sort of a statement of wisdom. You know, it sounds like something you'd hear from an old farmer.
Yeah, yeah. The highest philosophies often come from, you know, the rural farmers and stuff. It's interesting. So many times when we think of, like, philosophy, you know, we've been raised to kind of think of Socrates and Plato and Aristotle, and rightfully so, but there's this, you know, these other parts of the world that have been developing these equally fascinating philosophies. And it's fun to discover.
Yes, it is. And it's interesting that oftentimes you'll find once you've looked at it fairly closely, you'll see that people come to the same truths regardless.
Yep. The philosophers and the spiritual figures as well. And yeah, it's very interesting stuff. I guess in both, I think it's the Hopi that do these sand mandalas, you know, with different colored sand. They'll do these intricate designs.
I've seen pictures. They're stunningly beautiful.
And then Buddhist monks, some sects of them, do the same thing, these colored mandalas. And they've both been doing it for centuries. And it's interesting, too, when they're finished with it, then they just kind of blow it all away, wipe it all away. That's kind of a practice with impermanence or something like that. And just interesting rituals we have.
Wow. It makes one wonder about, you know, the whole art industry. You know, oftentimes it's the sellers, the purveyors of art, who tell us what the value is. You know, for example, so many painters, many of the Dutch masters, died miserable and poor, and scorned, and total failures. But yet now the art industry tells us that these paintings are worth, you know, millions of dollars, but it goes against everything that we think should be art to destroy something like that, doesn't it? It's a wonderful expression of how damn temporary we are.
Did you happen to see this movie called Who the Blank is Jackson Pollock? Or something like that?
I have not, and I have intended to, but I have not, and it's probably wonderful if you're recommending it.
I enjoyed it. If you don't know the story, it's basically like this, I think a truck-driving lady stumbles upon this painting at a garage sale for $5, and she gets it, and it turns out to be, actually they don't know, it's kind of a mystery, and it's a movie about the struggle on verification of these things and all that kind of stuff. It was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. And, Jackson Pollock, if I recall, was early 20th century?
Yeah, sounds about right. Or I'm thinking 1950 or 60.
I see. Yeah, that makes sense. You know, with the old, really, really old stuff, they're trying to analyze how much lead is in the paint, and there's
what
some big deal
made out of.
Yeah, in the age, and there's some really big deal about red, about whether they use crimson or some other anyway, apparently red was a big deal back then. It was really difficult to do red, is my impression of it.
Okay, okay. Yeah, that kind of rings a bell, actually. That's part of this investigation, stuff like that. Really interesting. And Pollock, he was kind of famous for those kind of splatter paintings, that kind of style.
Oh, yes. Sure.
And interesting. But anyway, I didn't want to take up too much of your time this evening, but I certainly want to say hello. And
I'm so glad you did, Preston. You're you know, if this was a business, I'd say you're a valued customer, but it's not. But you are certainly a valued caller.
Thank you. And I'm sure we'll chat again soon, huh?
I hope so. And have a wonderful weekend and a safe holiday. And I hope to hear from you again soon, sir.
Sure thing.
Thank you. And that was our dear friend Preston in Denver. He's always delightful. He always seems to have a movie for us. That's one I've missed. He was the person who recommended, who had seen Small Town Gay Bar, and which I have become a huge fan of. Interesting story there. And we now have Susan on line something or another. Welcome to the show, Susan.
Hi, Peter. How you doing, sweetie?
I'm doing fine this evening. It's good to hear from you.
I was just wondering, have you noticed that these kind of, you know, with in regard to the accusation about the radio host out in San Francisco?
Yes.
Have you noticed that these kind of accusations are kind of turning into the latest incarnation of the blacklist?
Oh, now that is a hell of a good point, Susan. It really is. And that's about the same way it worked. Instead of calling you a communist, you're some other despised segment of society.
Exactly. You don't have to be convicted. Just the accusation is enough. You're done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And certainly he would be a valuable target.
Mm-hmm.
I can't think of anyone, really. You know, we've got, of course, the Nova M, and I know Mike has carried on some terrestrial radio, but certainly KGO. I don't think Air America has anything like a KGO. And, I mean, you know, I roll off the call letters KGO, and I freaking live in Florida. You know what I'm saying? It's like a national, right, it's a national institution.
I'm just thinking people like Randy Rhodes, Stephanie Miller, Mike Malloy, they better make it a point never to be alone with a small child, ever, which is, in Mike's case, it's going to be really difficult since he's got one.
Good point.
God, this country's getting really weird.
Well, it is. It's becoming terrifying. You know, skinheads publishing lists of LGBT politicians and all of us being monitored, just waiting to kick our doors in. And you know, I know I'm being probed. I went through a whole story a while back before this show came on the air. But I was being
You were getting Halliburton probed.
Halliburton, mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah. And Department of Defense. And in fact, I ran a Google search on it, and I'm not the only one. There are a lot of people going, what in the hell are they hitting my computer for? It's got to be to find out where you're going. To find out anything about you that's a clue. You know, I never thought I would live in a time like this. This is so contrary to all the things I learned in the little country school I went to, in elementary school and all. It's just, what the hell is this?
And here's another really sinister, I guess I'm paranoid. Has it occurred to you that the one type of person that could really, really, really bring their house of cards down is a hacker.
You know, that's considered a terrorist, too, though. They would, you know, really cyber terrorists.
But I have, the thing is, I've known people who had the smarts. I'm not saying they actually did it. I'm saying they had the intelligence to slide right in there, poke around, see what was there, and slide right back out and never be noticed.
Yes, and never be noticed. And, of course, the federal government is no doubt no more secure than many banks and department stores who are hacked fairly regularly, or at least used to be.
Yeah.
But you never say that because you don't want to, you know, create some sort of panic among your customers. And not to mention the security, they ship hard drives with people's social security numbers on it, and they don't even insure them, or, you know, they mail them, you know, partial post. And Susan, too, something I came across fairly recently, the Bush administration, I don't know if it's credible or not, has been accusing Iran and I believe Russia also of hacking into NORAD, are trying to shut something down, the electric grid. I mean, you know, if it's not a nuclear, if they're not building nuclear bombs, they're going to say they're hacking in. Or, you know, it's this constant, everybody's got to be worried. And really, it's our own government we have to be worried about. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, this,
and that,
yeah,
that statement makes me a terrorist, I guess. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I don't know if this is an urban legend or if it's just gossip. What the word was when I was just starting into the computer world, Cheyenne Mountain, as far as computer security, is a joke.
Really?
Yeah. Now, I don't know if that's an urban legend or gossip or the truth, but that was floating around.
Well, they've made some big to-do.
It would surprise me.
Yeah, there was a big to-do about systems that are never connected to the Internet. They're completely isolated. There's no outgoing wires. But then, of course, those systems can't communicate. So what are they really good for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Unless you can coordinate everything. So at some point, I think everything, even if it's through several routers and some other mainframe located in the secure under, I think everything's pretty much connected. I don't think there are any disconnected systems anymore. I may be wrong.
And in which case, then it becomes your software's ability to detect and wipe out an intruder. But the thing is, a lot of these government agencies, at least quite a few years ago, were running these incredibly obsolescent computers.
Mm-hmm.
Like even as far back as just a few years ago, the FAA was running the entire, system.
Track of the airline guys, the guys who tracked them, but I can't, you're right, the, those guys.
On a computer with tubes.
I remember seeing something about that. There were shots of them. There were actual tubes there, yes. And they would overheat and blow up and stuff.
Yeah, and it took up, several rooms. You know, it was one of those clean room style things from the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there's always such waste.
With a desktop.
Yes, and recently here in Florida, the Human Services Division of Florida, the Health and Human Services, I think they run like Florida Medicaid and Florida Medicare and all that sort of thing. Their computer system was hopelessly outdated, as was the software, the whole system. So there was this huge scandal ahead of a grand jury investigation. You know, the high-end politicians hired the company that they knew somebody, and there were kickbacks, and the whole thing cost millions upon millions upon millions of dollars over cost, and it wouldn't work, and people were not getting their food stamps in Florida, and little old ladies were trying to get food, you know, at the soup kitchen because it was a remarkable. Who did that?
They did it with Portland. Did that too? Only they did it with their water billing system. So they had people there who normally had a $30 water bill, $5,000.
Oh, my God.
And it took them 10 years. And I don't think they scrapped everything. And this was a multi-billion dollar system, and they just junked it.
You know, I think that I'm not sure how far it went in Florida, but there was at least talk about pulling the whole thing out and scrapping it, even though it was all shiny new and none of the software would work together. I mean, they were just as bad off with the new stuff because nobody could update the old stuff. Yeah. And, you know, the world isn't meant to be this damn complicated.
And I kept saying to myself, guys, why don't you get a geek and tell him what you want, and he'll tell you how to get the geek.
That's too funny. You have to look at something like a head-on radio network. None of us have met. Wayne and Bob have met, of course, but none of us really have met, yet we've managed to interface an entire operating network as far away as Australia, and it's fairly damn reliable.
Across several operating systems and several platforms.
That's true.
Let me see. Gene's running on a Mac.
True.
You're running Vista. I'm running XP.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
Ben's running Linux.
Well, yes, he is. Oh, yes, and Ben's very fond of Macs too. And then, of course, God knows what the server Beach is running, which is, of course, how we do another aspect of the program. Those are big, you know, computer clusters. Computers that support clusters. I'm not sure which. Windows Server 2007, I believe, can support small clusters. But, you know, there's just so much level of complexity. Even buying a car is risky. But if it's something as complicated as the computer systems for a whole state, you're just ready to, you just might as well just open the wallet and pour out your money because they're going to get you.
Either that or open a vein and just go ahead and commit suicide.
The old warm water trick. We've talked about that a lot lately.
I know when I was doing support, somebody called in and said they had a Windows 2000 server, and I just wanted to hide under the desk.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually, the first operating system for a server, I was a NT server, and you know, that was a difficult operating system. There was nothing that was intuitive and very little that was automated. And you had, you know, to change anything, you had to change it in 15 places. You know, it was really cumbersome.
Yes, I know, the hard way. What made my job interesting was I was trying to interface HP printers into it. And, oh, God,
Right. NT had issues with drivers. There was all this stuff about the old. Yeah, that was a huge step there with the 98 XP and all that, rather NT, and there was Windows NT works. Yeah, printer drivers were a huge deal.
Especially since when Windows XP came out, they didn't wait until people like the big printer companies like HP. They didn't wait until they'd written the printer drivers, so there weren't any.
Mm-hmm. And this is happening with Vista to a degree too. Some companies are just not even bothering. They're saying, buy a new printer. Look, the printer costs you $50, $60. You know what I'm saying? Just buy a new printer. You know, we could not put an investment millions of dollars in writing a new driver for it. Get over it, you know?
Unfortunately, they're running into the brick wall of people's stubbornness. A lot of people, they flat won't buy the damn printer. So I can't face up them.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's the big, laser printers that, print, 30, 50 pages a minute that are used in offices, where a whole bunch of people, it's a central printer. And you're right. You can't just throw those out and buy a new printer. Those things are...
Hey, you go out and shell out $5,000 for a printer, you're not going to just go out and
buy.
I'm sure we'll have an audience today.
Oh, no, the chat room's following right along. They're talking about printers and HP computers and operating systems. They follow right along with us. You can't trick the chat room. They're right up to speed.
Yeah, the HP printers, I can tell you which ones, the ones when I was there, some of them were just magnificent printers.
Well, I agree. They were.
The other ones.
They were, and they were built like a tank. You couldn't wear one out. If
HP put out the original laser jet printer, the very first one, and it was built, it was about 6 feet square. Honest to God, it needed its own table. It was huge. Do you know that 25 years ago, and when I was doing support, we were still getting calls from people, very angry people. I can't find a toner cartridge for my printer. It's an original HP laser jet. I want to know where I can get toner cartridges.
Oh, my stars. Nice try.
No, actually, HP still sells them. Because you couldn't kill them.
Yeah, I have the same issue too, to a degree. I have an old the LaserJet 4, and they last forever too.
Yeah, keep that thing. Don't let it go. You can't kill it.
No, you can't kill it. It prints 12 pages per minute, which by today's standards is a little bit slow, but it just never fails. It just works and works and works. I started buying the new toner off eBay. You can't find it anywhere, really. Except the refill, so I just buy new cartridges off eBay.
You got a LaserJet 4?
Mm-hmm. Yes, LaserJet 4. It's not the one with PostScript. It's just the standard one.
Well, no, the toner cartridge doesn't have anything to do with PostScript.
Oh, yes, I know. Yes, I know. But I'm just saying there was a LaserJet 4M that had PostScript built in, and then there was a LaserJet 4, and I've got a 4.
Yeah, let's see. I'm going to see something here. Let me see if I can find this image.
Oh, the cartridge number? It's a 9-something, 92228 or something. It's hard to know. But I prefer to put a new one in it rather than the rebuilt. You just never know when a rebuilt's going to dump its toner.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to do... Okay. So is it a laser or a death jet?
Oh, it's a LaserJet. It's a LaserJet 4. And it weighs 1,000 pounds, and it has a parallel and a serial input, as if I would hook it up to a serial. But it's there.
Yeah, I know. They've got one. They had one that you could actually hook it up with an infrared port.
Okay, I think they may have started that on the 5. If I'm not mistaken, they started it on the LaserJet 5s, which was really kind of cool for laptops.
Mm-hmm.
We have Jim on the line. Let's bring Jim aboard. I think we can. Jim can be ported in. Bob, do we still have Jim along?
Right here, Peter, 5x5.
Welcome to the show, Jim. How are things in Tara?
No, it isn't Tara. I don't think it's Tara. That's in Georgia.
Oh, my. We have Susan with us, too.
Cousin Miriam and I had to hide Dr. Drew's body.
Yeah, what was it? We're talking about, what was that, Clue? Is that what you're bringing? The Clue thing we talked about, I believe?
That's my sweet Charlotte. That's all.
Oh, I see.
Oh.
No, but going back to NORAD that was mentioned earlier, the North American Air Defense Command, which is now the North American Aerospace Command, what was the comment made about their computers not communicating or something like that?
Oh, we were talking about computer security, and I remember reading something in the past about some big computer system the government ran. I don't know if it was NORAD or not, Jim, but that the big claim to fame was that it was totally isolated and not connected to any external jacks or ports or webs or anything like that. And as Susan and I began to talk, I began to speculate that probably that there are no computers left anywhere on the planet that are not connected in some way.
We see one of the missions of NORAD, Peter, is to work actively with the Canadian government. You see, that's the thing right there. That's the whole genesis of NORAD, is to combine our assets with Canadian assets.
Yeah.
For the purpose of protecting our country and, of course, the Northern Hemisphere. That's the way it was envisioned.
Which means you can't isolate them.
Well, they have their own means of security, and they have their own means of, in this computer age in which we live, going to other federal agencies, of tracking just about anything that goes on. You know, the internet has a two-edged, the blade cuts both ways. It's a wonderful thing, but one that's quite easily surveilled and easily tracked, which, of course, we have a lot of dedicated people who work for the federal government. I was one of them. I'm retired now.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still intensely loyal to those people because I know what they do.
Do you hear from them, Jim?
And I respect what they do.
Do you ever hear from them? It'd be interesting if you did, or have they all retired, the people you knew?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, the commander of NORAD used to be my senior raider in Washington. He's no longer the commander of NORAD, but he's passed on. But nonetheless, I'm familiar with these people. I'm intensely loyal to the Air Force and DOD. I realize they've made mistakes in a lot of things, but wherever there's greatness, there's the possibility of great error. But they do a wonderful job in many respects.
I've got a friend who followed her husband all over the world. Her husband was in SAC.
Does that even exist anymore?
Right. Or did it get folded into one of the other?
They transitioned to all those things. It used to be a MAC, SAC, and TAC. It used to be Military Airless Command, Tactical Air Command, and Strategic Air Command. And now it's Aerospace Command. And, you know, what they tried to organize and meet changing needs and with changing technology and, you know, to combat the changing threat situations as the world has evolved. I mean, everything is in a state of flux, if you will, politically, nationally, militarily, and these assets have been tailored to combat these threat conditions.
Well, there's so many threat conditions these days. You know, the whole concept of cyberterrorism, it's not just, you know, mom and pa getting your credit card number. It's, you know, if you could shut down the entire electric grid, there must be security layers upon security layers. You know, we talk about funding the military, but okay, I have a doubt, and I'm not sure who I lost. Who's with me?
I'm here.
Okay, we must have lost Susan. She may have had a glitch in her phone. So I was saying that that there has to be lots of funding for security systems for computers, too. And maybe, in fact, you know, Iran and Russia are trying to hack into the airport controllers. I don't know, but there was an article about that recently.
Well, possibly. You've always got spy versus spy, that type of thing, and people trying to, well, you know, they expect you to do it. And someone mentioned using hackers to try to, well, what they're going to do with a hacker, if they can find a good hacker, they're going to bring him on board as an employee.
You know? That's true. In fact, I've read some stories about that. Have you, too, about hackers being hired because they were so damn good they had to hire them so that they could strengthen the security systems?
Well, they're an asset. Good.
Yeah, nice work if you can get it.
Well, you know, that's exactly what I would do. I mean, you know, it's kind of like what FDR did when he hired Joseph Kennedy to chair the first Securities and Exchange Commission, because Joseph Kennedy was one of the crookedest traders on Wall Street. Well, in order to help police Wall Street, first thing FDR did was to hire Joe Kennedy. He said it takes the crook to catch one.
Hmm. Yeah. You know, this whole thing, the whole spy versus spy. Jim, you think the world will ever get straight and we can, as the Beatles said, live together as one?
No, I don't think so. It's just the nature of a human animal.
So,
you know, one-upsmanship. I was listening to CNN last week, and they had an extremely interesting news article about the present-day Russian Republic and how well they're doing under Putin. And, you know, their incomes have doubled for the average person. They're millionaires in Russia. And, you know, apparently they're doing a lot better than they were in the early 90s when communism fell and they had a lot of people taking advantage and stealing government assets. And now that's being brought under a tighter rein. And the people over there seem to be perfectly happy with it, you know?
Well, I hope so. Not all the news is good. There's lots of news about the persecution of various groups. I was under the impression, to a degree, it was going back to the strict government control. Maybe they're very successful, but
I mean, Peter, in that country, it seems as though there is almost a longing for that type of control with many Russians. I mean, even when the communist system fell, there were lots of people who were very unhappy with that collapse because it just completely collapsed their whole economy and everything. And so the Russians seem historically to always end up with a very strong leader with very strong central control, and that system works very well for them.
You're right. Historically, that's absolutely true. It's far back in history as I know. There's always been some sort of a iron-fisted ruler going on there.
Well, if you look at the history of the Russian czars, we could say Ivan the Terrible. I mean, he was just absolutely pretty rough doll to deal with. But, I mean, he did vastly increase the size of his domain. Then you had Catherine the Great, who was by comparison, a very enlightened ruler. And she was very much in correspondence with the philosophes and Voltaire and people like that in France. Of course, the French Revolution occurred, and that threatened her own existence, and she had to withdraw back to that. And then you look at Peter the Great. Well, he was a rough customer, but still, he had a mission, and he accomplished it. If it weren't for his drive and determination, there would be no St. Petersburg, because it was built on Mars. And they literally had to haul in all this dirt by hand upon which to build the city and drill pilings, you know, by using manual labor. And, you know, that country is used to those type of situations, and I really can't judge them. Because I have a great deal of respect and admiration for the Russian people, for their ability to endure, their ability to survive, because they have been treated very unkindly by history.
Well, it's true. They've always been, it almost seems like, I mean, it's such a huge country, you'd think that it couldn't be isolated, but in many ways, Russia has always stood separate from the world. Even China seems to be more integrated into the world than Russia.
But look at what Russia has given us. Opera, music, poetry, and the respect they have for their poets and their writers. I mean, for example, when the Germans invaded Russia, one of the first things they did was to disassemble and take apart the homes of writers like Tolstoy, Pushkin, composers like Tchaikovsky, and to move them back as best they could beyond the reach of the Germans, because they knew this was part of their cultural heritage. And do you think that we would do that if an invading army would fling itself upon our shores to go to the house of William Faulkner and try to preserve it? I don't think so.
I think there'd be lots of wailing and gnashing of teeth because Walmart was closed, quite frankly. The United States seems to be so locked into this lethargy that, I can't ever imagine protests in the streets. I mean, you know, it just seems to me we've gotten past it. We're just too damn comfortable.
Well, those people have never been allowed to be comfortable, and they've always had to try to fight to survive and take things which we take for granted. They've had to endure an awful lot. And I don't know. It's one of my favorite areas of study, and I have a great deal of compassion and a great deal of respect for them. And whereas I don't agree with some of the stuff that some of their rulers have done, well, I don't know if I wouldn't have done the same thing if I were in their place, if I were possessed of their drive and energy and determination to bring my country into a modern type of world in which they could, you know, function among the world of nations.
Well, I'd have to agree with you in the sense that if we go along with the statement that absolute power creates what? Absolute wickedness and control the whole bit, that seems to be true no matter what country or what leader we're talking about. So the fact that it's the iron-fisted thing isn't really a Russia, specific to Russia. It's not something you could fault Russia on. It has to do with the how much power people accumulate.
Well, and it's how some of them have used it as well. And if you look at, looking back at Russia, for example, the very Tsar who freed the serfs was Tsar Alexander II. And within hours of having signed the manifesto to free the serfs, guess what happened to him? He was blown apart by an anarchist bomb. They didn't want him to make things better because it cheated them of their cause. Stole their thunder from them. And Alexander II was a good man. And he was killed because of the good he tried to do.
Well, you certainly can't say that any of the Russian leaders were stupid. I mean, we seem to be just ed up with stupid over here. I mean, honestly, Jim, it's pretty grim.
They've had to be smart. I mean, you know, in many ways, when Stalin trusted Hitler and thought, you know, he could outsmart Hitler, he should pull a boner there because he wasn't expecting that. Stalin was walking around there for a couple of weeks, didn't know what to do. He didn't know whether to ask to go blind. You know, they came out to his doctor to get him, and he thought they were coming to arrest him. But nonetheless, you know, hey, I know I'm repeating myself. I just have a lot of respect for this. For them as a nation. I don't like what they've done. I don't like a lot of the stuff about the gulags and, oh, Lord, the torture and all these kinds of things. But, you know, our own country, Peter, is filled with very similar things, which are not very pleasant to talk about, you know, in our history.
Oh, hell yeah. Take the Thanksgiving, for instance. We weren't very nice to the Indians, yet we give thanks. There's so many things that become institutionalized and traditionalized that
it's a funny thing. I will never forget listening to, it was one of the last speeches that Hitler made before he went to war. It was in April of 1939, and Roosevelt had cabled him and asked him if he was going to attack Poland and, you know, what his intentions were. And Hitler, of course, had this masterly speech in which he said, "Mr. Roosevelt, you know, you can concern yourself with the fate of the world, while mine is limited to my own people." And he said, you know, look at your own history. Did you settle your disputes with the American Civil War peacefully at the council table? And how did you treat the American Indian? And, you know, look at what the British did to the Boers in South Africa. That's where Hitler got his idea for the concentration camp. And the mass deportations and stuff like that. Hitler looks at American history and saw how we dealt with the Indians. You know, he was a great devotee of a German writer named Carl May. He did nothing but cowboy and Indian stories. He used to keep those stories on his bedside reading table.
Well, I have to say that I have very little faith that mankind will heal itself. I don't know if it will necessarily get worse. The weapons are certainly getting worse, and the problems are getting worse with global warming and the running out of fuel, I think the problems are becoming more global in nature. I don't know if we're getting more evil or not, but I think we're at the end of our little roller coaster ride as a planet. I really have some grim ideas about it. What are your thoughts?
Hope not. I mean, you know, right outside my door is a huge United Nations flag. And I've always believed in that organization. And it's really funny that the very foundation of the UN, the League of Nations, was conceived by an American president, but it was rejected by the Senate and never passed. And we were one of the last nations to join. I mean, Woodrow Wilson was the one who proposed the League of Nations at the Treaty of Versailles back in 1918. And yet we, Henry Cabot Lodge and the Republicans, defeated it. And they won.
Yeah, there's...
You know,
inflation,
I guess. I don't know.
Every once in a while, you still see one of those chain letters go around the internet, you know, saying that the UN is a secret organization that's trying to take over America. Every once in a while, you still see those surface. That sentiment is still there.
Well, I think that's atavistic. That's just a throwback. I mean, we have to learn to work together and pool our assets and try to get along with each other. That's my hope. Because that's the only
mine too.
The world has, in which they can really hope, and that, and I'll say this, and I can be criticized for it, and also divine intervention.
Jim, I was just about to say that. I mean, I have no faith that mankind can resolve it, and you know, I'm not sure if you want to believe that little green men will come, you know, down and land and just be more powerful than us and solve it, or if God will step down from the clouds and solve it. But I place no faith in us. I have seen us, and us is scary.
It is. And I would
scare
like,
me.
And I would like to believe there is a just and loving God who is there to try to help whenever and intervene when he deems necessary. And that's just my personal belief. I'm not trying to convince anyone, but I'm just sharing, that's all.
Thank you, Jim.
Just sharing. That's just my personal opinion.
Me too. And no. I appreciate your call. I'm going to need to. I have some the calls are stacking up, and I need to move along. And Jim, I always enjoy talking to you. Thank you for calling.
Good night, Peter. You have a good weekend here.
Hugs to you. You too. And we have Alan the trucker. I'm always thrilled to talk to Alan. Welcome aboard, Alan.
Hey, Peter. I was supposed to speak to your guest.
I'm so sorry. I didn't realize. Jim is not with us. I'm sure he's listening though. What were you about to say?
I was going to ask him about the Soviet Union. Were they really? I think the our government always went overboard in saying that the Soviet Union was anti-religious or anti-Christian. I was just wondering what he thought about how they treated other religions during the Soviet time, and how's things going there now.
Good question. I think there's a huge wave of conservatism going on. I can say that as a fact from what I'm seeing in the news about repression of progressive groups that. So oftentimes these things are usually backed by the church, of course. So I'd say that they are in the throes of the same kind of conservative weirdness that we are going through, and probably encouraged by the church. I would guess they always seem to be involved in the mix somewhere.
Yeah, I don't think they discriminated against religion as much as it was played out to be during the Soviet era. I think a lot of that was a lot of hype by the Christians over here. But I might be wrong. That's what I was going to ask Jim about. I bet you're not wrong.
I bet you're right. The folks over here do tend to amplify anything that's not under their complete control. And of course, in an authoritarian government, the church can be a huge asset. If you dare to violate those lines of separation, which so many governments do. So I imagine it was hand in hand myself.
Yeah, I've heard that Gorbachev is trying to start another party over there called the Democratic Socialist Party. I read
really?
A BBC article a few months ago.
Well, that's interesting.
Stomped out or something. I haven't heard much about it, have you?
Well, actually, Alan, no, I hadn't heard that. It wouldn't surprise me because it seems to be, you know, awfully authoritarian, and it would probably take someone of the stature of you know, a former leader to have any chance, any snowball's chance in hell of starting another party. So that would make perfect sense. If in fact the report is true, I would almost guarantee you a former leader is involved, one who's on the outs with the inner circle.
Can you still hear me okay?
Yes, sir. I sure can, Alan.
Let me tell you something else I heard recently on the news I thought was pretty interesting is, you know how these fundamentalists want to bring their religion and their morality all around the world? I read an article
Absolutely.
In the BBC the other day where young women from Iraq were going over to Syria and to support their family, they're going into prostitution as young as 12 years old. And then these men from Saudi Arabia come over and just use them. And I find that so ironic that this is what this Bush administration has done. And then
yes, sir. And I too... I was just about to say that, yes, I too have seen news reports along those lines. I didn't realize that the primary customers were the Saudis, but I've got to tell you, I'm not at all surprised. You know, the flesh commodity there, who has the money. And you know, when you come out of a country that's completely torn apart and, you know, they're hunting you down in the streets, your family is dead, I mean, you have no options. What are you going to do? The educational system's collapsed. There are no skills. There's only desperation, and when desperation meets wealth, that's what you get. It's and yes, what has Bush done?
Yeah, it makes me think of this country. When I go to big cities like Oklahoma City or Nashville, and these cities seem like they're supposed to be big Christian cities, like, you know, the Baptist convention and things like that, these cities, also like Birmingham. I go into a city like that and park this truck, it just won't be long. Women start knocking on my door to sell their service. And I find it ironic that women have to stoop to do things like that in a city that's supposed to be so Christian.
Well, you'd think that there would be... Yeah, you'd think that there would be more brotherly love, but it seems to always cause division. It really does. There's so few helping hands, people who are trying to help. There's so few of those, and so much of a lack of money. Federal funding isn't always the best way to help people, but certainly those funds are drying up quickly. In fact, they're rolling back services for the disabled as fast as they possibly can, aging services are being funding is being. I mean, every nickel and dime possible is going into this damn war. So, it's not just a money thing, though. You'd think, though, that it's interesting that you brought that up, Alan. You know, we're talking about that the levels of divorce and teenage pregnancies and, the whole tawdry bit are so much higher in the South, in the red states, in the strongly red states.
I know about that in my own family where I have a relative that I bought her a car so she'd go to college, but she decided to have children instead. So... I know about what you're talking about. Pretty bad.
Well, where are you now, Alan?
I'm in South Carolina. I'm about to pick up a load and go to up to Delaware, so I guess I might get caught up. It's bad weather. If I do, I'll just pull over and take a break.
Well, I think the Kincaids have been hit with some pretty heavy snow. One of our chatters was just telling us it was 20 degrees where they are. Are you freezing?
Oh, it's 45 degrees here. That's a warm spell. But I was, a couple of days ago, I was in Pennsylvania. It was up in the teens, or down in the teens. I drove through West Virginia yesterday, and snow on the ground. It was pretty nice.
Did you really? Do you also? I've never really been sure about your travels. Do you do the West Coast also?
Oh no, I never go to the West Coast. I may do that once a year, maybe around Christmas time. I think I go. So maybe I'll go this year. I kind of enjoy going through the desert, looking up at the stars.
Well, it probably is easier driving for you to hit those long, you know, you talk about driving through West Virginia, that's got to be a little bit of a challenge to stay alert with that much of, you know, hauling behind you. You know, I imagine everything to be one big hairpin turn in West Virginia, although I've never been there.
Oh, yeah. I was driving through West Virginia last night, and I have this detector that tells on the truck that tells me if I take a curve too fast, and it went off last night. So I was trying to make the bus to my stop so I would drive over my hours. I made it okay.
Well, you know, speaking of hours, I'm glad you brought that up, and also I'm curious about the detector. Does it detect the load shifting or just detect the speed and the curve?
Yeah, the speed and the curve. It tells me if I drive too fast around the curve. It tells me how much slower I should go. Should I should go 6 miles an hour slower?
Wow, that's interesting. It calculates the whole thing. You've got some pretty smart devices, but I was thinking about you. Actually, you crossed my mind the other day, and this was, it has to do with the whole Republican meltdown and the fact that so many businesses and their powerful lobbyists are convinced at this point that the Democrats will control the House and the Senate and the presidency very soon. And they are also convinced that that combination will be less friendly to their business interests. One of the lobbying groups that is pushing to get their legislation through right now before it degenerates any further are the people who control how many hours you can drive doing what you do. They're trying to get that raised. What do you think about that? Is that really doable, or how does all that work?
Well, I could drive 11 hours now, and I don't think I want to drive any more hours than that a day. What about you? Would you want to drive over 11 hours a day?
God, no. And is that what the limit is now, 11 hours? That's incredible.
Yeah. The weekly rate. You can't drive over 70 hours in 8 days. Maybe that's what they're trying to raise.
But see, that's still a 70-hour work week. My God, and the cost of fuel, you know, it just amazes me the degree to which they want to squeeze people.
Yeah, and I just cannot figure out why we're not burning biodiesel. I'd much rather be running that. That way, if the truck leaks, I'll just smell French fries or something.
Oh, that's a great—that's a positive attitude. You certainly get an A+ for keeping your mental health intact.
Yeah, because this diesel fuel that we're using—that stuff could give you cancer right here. One of the times when my mom was in the hospital, there's this guy in the room next to her, and he drove truck all his life, and he got cancer, and that's all. Thing they figure out what happened is he got lung cancer from the fumes from diesel engines, but he never did smoke.
I see. Well, that it is awfully strong. I mean, you know, occasionally, you know, folks will fuel at a place, a truck stop, because you know they have a restaurant and the whole bit, and just to you know walk by the trucks that are fueling up, it really is awfully strong-smelling stuff. What is it, like part kerosene? What all's in that stuff? Okay, I think we may have lost. We may have lost Alan. Alan may have actually been driving. I don't know. I didn't hear the background sounds, but we may have lost Alan. That was always. That's an enjoyable call. That's the second time I've talked with Alan since the beginning of Strictly Confidential. And the last time we had Alan on, it was I believe it was a Friday evening. And if it wasn't a Friday evening, we thought it was, because we definitely had a lot of people on the line. I remember we had Kate, and I believe we had Preston, and we had Alan all at the same time. And I'm not sure, if I'm not mistaken, there was someone else in there too. And so it's always good to hear from Alan. I'm glad that he called. And tell you what, it's 10:25. And we're going to pretend it's 10 o'clock and do a top of the hour at the bottom of the hour. The reason we're going to do it that way is I should probably have a long swig of water and take a short break. And so as we come up on the top of the hour, which is really the bottom of the hour, I am Peter Godbold. This is Strictly Confidential, and you're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
My head is in a spin. My feet don't touch the ground. Because you're near to me, my head.
This is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are charging the CIA with acting above the law. Senate Democrat Dick Durbin wrote a letter to Attorney General Michael Mukasey asking for a probe into whether the CIA obstructed justice by destroying videotapes from 2002, which contained interrogation scenes that many critics have described as torture. President Bush says he doesn't recall being told about the existence of the videotapes or that they were destroyed. CIA Director Michael Hayden admits to ordering the tapes' destruction to protect the identity of CIA operatives. Four of the five British residents held by the U.S. at Guantanamo Bay will be released, according to a report from the BBC. The British government requested release of all five men who have residential status in Britain but are not citizens. The Pentagon is warning Britain that the men are dangerous. The U.S. accuses one Jordanian refugee of being a prominent al-Qaeda recruiter and financier. State Department Inspector General Howard Krongard has resigned his position under heavy scrutiny regarding his brother's link to Blackwater USA. As the State Department's top investigator, Krongard has been accused of stopping probes into waste, fraud, and abuse in Iraq. Meantime, federal prosecutors have narrowed the focus of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians. Authorities are now looking specifically at just three Blackwater guards. Others have been given immunity for cooperating in the case. A U.S. Marine faces a murder charge in connection with the shooting death of an Iraqi detained during combat operations in Fallujah. Sergeant Jermaine Nelson faces possible court-martial. In Brussels, meeting last night, NATO agreeing to maintain its 17,000-troop peacekeeping force in Kosovo, the former Yugoslavian province, threatening to declare independence Tuesday. That's a move Serbia says will lead to war. A fierce cyclone is pummeling Fiji with 160-mile-an-hour winds, the Category 4 storm expected to raise floodwaters by as much as 6 feet. And it is the worst offshore oil spill in South Korea's history. An oil tanker collided with another vessel this morning. At least 2.7 million gallons of crude oil have spilled into the sea, creating a slick very wide. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
As the world moves to the Internet for marketing, promotion, sales, and communications, it is important to stake out your presence, your business, or yourself in an effective way. The people at Byte Technology know how to define your best self on the web so that people who know you and those who will want to can get a clear picture of who you are and what you have to offer. Byte Technology will design your website so that you will attract new customers and keep your current client base engaged and informed. As McLuhan said, the medium is the message. And never was that more true than in the new Internet commerce world. Whatever your business, selling products or services, to the general public or to a niche market, you need a presence that smart people, the people who make the best customers, can find quickly and understand immediately. Byte Technology will custom produce such a site for you. Byte Technology. See the difference at byte-technology.com or call 831-656-9178.
Super Slugger Barry Bonds today pleaded not guilty to 4 counts of perjury. He was indicted last month by a federal grand jury for lying to investigators concerning his alleged use of performance-enhancing drugs. Less than 50 remaining Pearl Harbor survivors stood in honor of their fallen comrades today, the 66th anniversary of the Japanese bombing. Survivors were given a thunderous standing ovation as they saluted the sunken hull of the USS Arizona. More than 2,300 Americans died in the attacks on the morning of December 7, 1941. America's consumer confidence is sinking. It is currently at its second lowest level since 1992. Consumer spending accounts for 2/3 of U.S. economic growth, so what buyers do is critical. Retail sales have comparatively remained steady, with a slight increase expected for the month of November. Chrysler executives say the company will lose $1 billion this year. The newly private company temporarily shut down shifts at some of its U.S. plants and in Mexico. Light sweet crude oil trading at $88.28 a barrel, gold at $800.20 an ounce. At this week's close of Wall Street, the Dow Jones Industrial Average up 5.5 points at 13,625, NASDAQ and S&P 500 both down nearly 3 points. And there's always more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Barbara Lewis.
And he's back, riding across America on a horse named Strictly Confidential, a man who knows his way around a pair of chaps. Here's your host, Peter Godbold.
And he's back, riding the horse across the plains of the United States, screaming freedom, freedom. This is the Head-On Radio Network. The telephone number is 877, the number 4, Head-On. That translates into 877-443-2366. If you have unlimited long distance, you could use that and save the studio some money. That's area code 304-658-3333. That rings in West Virginia. Mail arrives to Peter at Head On Radio Network. As I promised earlier in the evening, I had one other thing to catch up on from last night's show, and that was I was going to read the statement by Judy and Dennis Shepherd, the parents of Matthew Shepherd, in view of the fact that the hate crimes amendment did not get through. Oh, Lord. Bundled it into a defense funding bill. Planned it all out, but all of a sudden, oops, at the last minute, we made a mistake. We should have let it be, you know, useless people. In any case, the Judy and Dennis Shepherd, the statement is fairly short. We are truly dismayed to find that Congress now will put aside its leadership on the passage of federal hate crimes legislation that includes sexual orientation and gender identity. At this time of the year that fills us all with hope for mankind, humankind actually, we are sad to find that the congressional majority of each House who have already adopted the Matthew Shepherd Act cannot yet come together. If not here, where? If not now, when? Make no mistake, this is a small triumph of process over principle. We are dedicated to redoubling our efforts next year to achieve our vision of a hate-free America that truly includes everyone. This has never been simply about our son Matthew Shepherd and our family. This legislation is a gift delayed but will never be forgotten for all American families. We thank our friends and our allies and the champions in Washington and around the world who have struggled so hard this year. We know that we will unite once again next year to achieve the passage of this milestone of human rights legislation. And what a folly it was to bundle that bill with the defense legislation. There are so many people who are committed to not funding this atrocity that we're pulling in Iraq, and who can blame them? And so how do you tell the a Democratic representative that he needs to vote for the additional funding for that just so that they can get this through. How do you separate these two very important issues? That's a strategy. You know, I think that we're getting the Democratic Party seems to get its strategy off the back of a cereal box or a decoder ring. Honest to God, they couldn't think their way out of a cardboard box. If you look at it from a purely results point of view, I think that's a valid statement. They've fallen flat on their faces on all three legislation acts that were promised, which would have been ENDA, the Employment Discrimination Act, and the Matthew Shepard and Don't Ask, Don't Tell, fallen flat on their faces. You have to wonder how much thought is given to this. It seems to be very little strategy left. You know, earlier we're talking about the Bernie Ward and what's going on with Bernie, and talking about so many things that are disturbing going on in the country at this point. Someone in the chat room typed in, this was during Bob Kincaid's show, which runs from 6 until 9 p.m. Someone in the chat room made the statement, "I want my country back," which reminded me, of course, of the wonderful song that came out a while back called "I'm Taking My Country Back." It occurred to me that we have a number of new listeners who have probably never heard this. In fact, unless you were listening to this network or one of the precious few progressive networks, you have never heard it. It was a song that came out a while back. "I'm Taking My Country Back." The Honky Tonkers for Truth was the main cover name. There was the man who sang it is the brother of a very famous country and western singer, and I'm sorry I don't have that name in front of me. But he, in other words, let me put it like this. The track was done by highly experienced Nashville musicians who have recorded with and for the huge name audiences. The singer is an accomplished singer and, in fact, the brother of another accomplished singer in the Nashville and country and western music industry. What I'm trying to get across here is that this was no nickel and dime something that came out of somebody's garage. It was a professionally produced recording. Now, the reception that this recording got was dumbstruck silence. No radio station would touch it. This was back in Bush's heyday when he was the darling and everyone, even the bright people, if you could call them that, not just the stupid Republicans, but even the bright Republicans felt that George W. Bush was a man of God and was leading this country in a godly way and was going to, you know, keep the brown people out and the Iraqi people dying and the oil safe and the queers out of the chapel. And so in any case, of course, this song was horrifying to so many people who heard it. In fact, one person who heard it from the conservative side of the fence, I happen to know for a fact, remarked, this was here locally, remarked that, well, it's certainly not very patriotic, because at the time, of course, patriotism meant loyalty to the president, not loyalty to the country, we the people, just loyal to the president. They completely ignore the office, of course, but loyal to that man, and as if he were the United States incarnate. He's merely a piece in the system, and a very powerful piece and a very stupid piece. Thank you. ELO in chat has pointed out it was Joe Stampley. Yeah, that sounds close. And his brother was Tony Stampley. That's very close. Thank you, ELO. Very close. And then they had a cover name of Honky Tonkers for Truth. But anyway, I point all this out to you just to let you know you're going to hear a professionally done recording, and you've never heard it before because the country music stations would not touch it. I dearly love this song. Thank you for sending it along, ELO. I could not locate my copy on such short notice. Bob, if you had run, "I'm Taking My Country Back."
Country music's got mamas and daddies. We got barrooms and no heartbreak songs. But I'm here today to stand up and say I feel about my home, sweet home. What's left, what's right, and what's wrong. And I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you
trading my stars and stripes. You took our jobs and sent them overseas. Now we owe billions to the red Chinese. You blew the budget and you bossed Iraq. So I'm taking my country back. We had a bundle in a treasury drawer, more than there had ever been before. But every day we're down and deeper in debt. Maybe 4 years should be all you get. Then you gave tax breaks to the millionaires, and you tried to make the working man pay. But you can't tax a man when his job's not there. Now look at where we are today. Hey, I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Well, I've been watching you and I don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You got too many fancy friends for me. The Saudis treat you like your royalty. You blew the budget and you bossed Iraq. Now I'm taking my country back. Now I can understand why you were hot, 'cause bin Laden never did get caught. So you said we had Saddam to blame, tried to tell us it was all the same. But now the years roll by and our kids keep dying. You don't even have a plan to bring them home. And those WMD you promised on TV, hey, admit it, you figured it wrong. So I'm taking my country back. Now you don't know my name, but you know who I am. I'm your everyday work hard, play hard, raise kids and pray hard, common man. And Lord knows I love this land. That's why I'm taking my country back. Son, you ain't been doing her right. Oh, I've been watching you. Don't like how you've been treating my stars and stripes. You say you might, but you divide us more. I see each other on the same floor. Are they supposed to be above all that? I'm taking my country back. I've got my family and my church and flag. I'm taking my country back.
Absolutely kick-ass country and western song. Absolutely has every potential and every ingredient and every instrument and every touch and edit. Flawless for a number one country record. Does anybody disagree with that? It's just fabulous. And yes, even an old disco diva like me loves that song to death. Oh my, I remember recording, burning several copies of it to a CD and passing it out at church. And boy, there were some upset people down there at the time. Of course, since it's never been distributed, nobody would touch the record, even though the record companies agreed it was wonderful, it was just too hot to touch. That was perfectly okay to do that because it was being distributed on the internet alone. So the fact that we put it on some CDs and distributed it is not an issue. But I just wanted you to hear that if you were new to this program. The protest has been going on. You know, and that's one of the things that is missing in this day and age with the protests are the wonderful, insightful protest songs. They just seem to be missing. The major labels won't touch them, of course, and so unless you happen to come across them on the internet. In fact, an artist that we interviewed recently has sent me a CD of some new work, protest type stuff, folk music in a way, that I haven't gotten to. I'll be sure and get to that over the weekend, and so we'll have some new stuff on Monday. Let's see, 10 to 44. I want to touch on this story, and I did want to try to get in. We talked about Lulu last night. We somehow got off on To Sir With Love, done by Lulu. I have an Almighty Dance remix of that, which is just stunning. It's Lulu doing it, but you'd never know it was, you know, it was very slow. It's a great, great track. I'll try to fit it in. But I want to tell you about the story, another huge failure, and it's about the United States and their care for HIV detainees. The report is from the Washington Post, and production jet is suggesting a remix for Taken by Country Back. That's a good idea, Bob. That's a hell of an idea. But in any case, the department, of course, the fall short is a huge understatement. The Department of Homeland Security has completely failed to provide any adequate care to immigrant detainees who have HIV. It puts their lives at risk, of course. There was a 71-page report whose findings were challenged by Homeland Security, of course. And the report is saying the agency denied, delayed, or interrupted treatment for HIV-positive detainees in immigration custody. The department's detention guidelines for people with HIV and AIDS has failed to meet national and international standards for appropriate care. The agency did little even to enforce their minimal standards. The report said that without improved standards for medical care, internal oversight, and accountability of the public, immigrant detainees with HIV and AIDS will continue to needlessly suffer and in many cases die in the United States detention centers. The detailed treatment of it detailed the report of several people who said, well, they've either known people who died or became drug resistant and received incomplete doses. You see, with the medications, if you go off of them, you die. Or if you don't take enough of them, you become resistant. Or if you don't take them regularly, you become resistant and you die. So it's a life-threatening situation. You have to keep on the medications. There was one story told by a cellmate of Victoria Arello. Victoria was a 23-year-old transgender detainee with HIV/AIDS. And in the interview with the Human Rights Watch, the person who was detained said that when Arello began to vomit blood in custody of the Department of Homeland Security detention centers, they told her to take Tylenol and drink a lot of water. She died a week later. There are 47 detainees with HIV in facilities run in U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement, Division of Homeland Security. There were 47 counted in 2007, but no one really knows because they're held in facilities like local jails, regional centers, overflow facilities. Nobody knows where they are. Of course, the Homeland Security is saying, we provide excellent care to the detainees in custody. It's an absolute priority with us, you lying bitch. Some more statistics, but just thought you'd like to know that. Let's see, 48:58. We have about 10 minutes, and I do want to fit this track in. It's we came up last night. Somehow I made a mistake. I have to admit to all my DJ friends, I actually said over the air that To Sir With Love was done by Dusty Springfield, which was a terrible bad on my part, and to make up for it, I'm going to actually run the To Sir With Love track with Bob's help, and this is Lulu, and it is which is done in England, of course, the Almighty Dance remix, people. It's the Almighty Dance remix, which is absolutely fabulous. To Sir With Love. And there you have it. That's Lulu, the Almighty remix, Almighty Records in England, with To Sir With Love, an amazing new version that I'm sure you have heard before. It does my heart good that record companies are, at least the ones that are in good graces with me, they're still remixing that type of music. And Bob said something funny in production chat while I was playing them. The song like To Sir With Love be considered child abuse in the current climate. And he is absolutely right. Oh, my. I want to give you a little bit of good news before we wrap. In New Jersey, and the fundamentalists are admitting that marriage equality is right around the corner. They are, in fact, giving up. It's the New Jersey Family Policy Council. Oh, my, whatever shall we do? However shall we explain this? The last week it was the New Jersey Equality Chairman Steve Goldstein projected that they are just a few votes short of a majority in supporting marriage equality. About 19 votes in the Senate and 39 in the Assembly, worth 21-41. And so it's right around the corner. And so in response, they're sending out to their supporters the New Jersey Family Policy Council. It's a right-wing group that wants a theocracy in New Jersey. Is saying that that their own contacts confirm that the support for a same-sex marriage bill is coming, that there's no way they can turn it around. They're telling their people who have been sending their Social Security checks in that it's a huge, it's huge, and it's, we know it's very discouraging to you. But they will say that, they're saying that, quote, we will continue to fight the good fight, which, of course, is a political euphemism for we're going down. So I just wanted to let you folks in New Jersey know. I know we have at least one listener in New Jersey, probably many more, but I just don't know them all. A guest we'd like to have on in the near future. We're going to start working on that soon. By the way, I'm getting some help. Last night I mentioned help, I need help, and we've had a couple of volunteers to help with booking guests, and we always enjoy our guests, and sometimes there's lots of emails that go back and forth, but anyway, there's some help. Isn't that amazing that they had on Radio Network, I just have 85 shows, we've now gotten to the point that I have to have help booking guests, not because they're hard to find, but because there's so many people, and it's just a godsend, just amazes me. I just want to tell you that it was prompted the killing of a gay man in Oklahoma City. Faith leaders and gay activists are all calling for legislation targeting hate crimes, and investigators believe the 62-year-old man was strangled October 26th by two white supremacists who targeted him because he was gay. So a group of clergy and gay rights activists and federal lawmakers are trying to get that passed. And meanwhile, the state's only openly gay lawmaker, who I would love to have on the show, is Representative Al McAfee, and he's planning to file a bill in the current legislative session to add that. So I'm running a little bit over, and I do want to say good night. Please stay for the horn section. Here's Cynthia Manley reminding you too.
This is the Quality News Network. Congressional Democrats are charging the CIA with acting above the law. Senate Democrat Dick Durbin wrote a letter to Attorney General Michael Mukasey asking for a probe into whether the CIA obstructed justice by destroying videotapes from 2002, which contained interrogation scenes that many critics have described as torture. President Bush says he doesn't recall being told about the existence of the videotapes or that they were destroyed. CIA Director Michael Hayden admits to ordering the tapes' destruction to protect the identity of CIA operatives. Four of the five British residents held by the U.S. at Guantanamo Bay will be released, according to a report from the BBC. The British government requested release of all five men who have residential status in Britain but are not citizens. The Pentagon is warning Britain that the men are dangerous. The U.S. accuses one Jordanian refugee of being a prominent Al-Qaeda recruiter and financier. State Department Inspector General Howard Krongard has resigned his position under heavy scrutiny regarding his brother's link to Blackwater USA. As the State Department's top investigator, Krongard has been accused of stopping probes into waste, fraud, and abuse in Iraq. Meantime, federal prosecutors have narrowed the focus of an investigation into the shooting deaths of 17 Iraqi civilians. Authorities are now looking specifically at just three Blackwater.